Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, June 30th of 2022. I am your host, Rosanna Longobetter. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we will look at what a lifeguard shortage in Boulder means beyond reduced operating hours at local pools. Colorado State University researchers have developed a new digital tool to identify high-risk areas where climate disasters overlap with social inequities. And John Landorf will be in the studio to interview the organizer of a fundraiser that teams up local restaurants with needs in Ukraine. At the bottom of the hour, we will have the BBC News headlines, and then it's a public affair. Host Shannon Young will speak with a couple of Colorado-based Ukrainians about the situation back home. Then at 9 a.m., we will have our second installment of the special radio theater broadcast of Give Me Liberty, A Free Man's Story. The piece was inspired by real events and was produced by award-winning director Donnie Betts. At 9:30, Doug Gertner will be in the Denver studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with a morning sound alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Christian Garibay.
Multiple climate and conservation groups filed a lawsuit Wednesday that would block the federal government from leasing public lands to fossil fuel companies. The lawsuit targets the leasing of 140,000 acres of public lands in Colorado, Wyoming, North Dakota, Utah, and others. The groups have spoken out against the Federal Department of the Interior and Bureau of Land Management, stating leasing this land to oil and gas groups will result in irreversible and significant environmental damage. Adams County School District 14 filed a lawsuit yesterday against the Colorado Board of Education, alleging that the Board of Education abused their power when it ordered the district to reorganize in May. The reorganization order would require schools in Adams 14 to close or consolidate. The district, which serves more than 6,000 students in northeast Denver, has some of the lowest test scores in the state. Since 2010, it has failed to meet the state's accreditation standards. The board issued for the district to be reorganized after it failed to accommodate a consulting company to improve its scores for a second time this year. Adams County 14 Teachers Union is also supporting the Adams County School District 14 in the lawsuit, as the decision also impacts the bargaining agreement that the union made with the school district. The popular Denver e-bike rebate program is back, and this time city officials have a plan. After the first round of rebates maxed out in a little over 3 weeks, the city has devised a new method of distributing the rebates. On July 11th, low to moderate income Denverites can apply to get a $400 rebate. The city will offer 2,000 rebates each month until the end of 2022. Those who are qualified will also receive assistance for the program. The state of Colorado and the Colorado Department of Energy is also reportedly planning to spend $12 million on a new voucher program that will encourage and assist more Coloradans to buy e-bikes. The program should launch sometime late this year or, alternatively, early in the coming year. The application dates for every round will be August 1st, September 6th, October 3rd, November 7th, and December 5th. Rocky Mountain National Park officials reported a rock slide Wednesday morning on Hallett Peak that occurred on Tuesday around 4:30 p.m. The rock slide happened on the Upper Chaos Canyon part of the park. Rocky Mountain National Park spokeswoman Kyle Patterson spoke on the incident, stating that there were people present in the area during the time of the natural rock slide, but no known injuries. The area was not closed off after the rock slide, but Patterson stated that it was important that visitors stay away until the landscape became more stable and that they should always exercise caution in rocky areas. Highlands Ranch HOA files a lawsuit against XL Energy. Luis Licon from KGNU has more.
The attorneys representing the Highlands Ranch Homeowners Association says that XL Energy did not properly maintain infrastructures in their neighborhood. The lawsuit says that this neglect caused 2 fires over the course of 4 years in the same areas. The first fire in 2016 burned 205 acres of grassland. The second fire, about 4 years later, was even bigger in the same area, burning more than 400 acres. The HOA says that XL Energy's lack of maintenance caused the power lines to spark and forced many families to evacuate their homes. According to the Denver Post, in addition to destroying the scenery in the area, the HOA says that the fires brought down home values in the entire area. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Five Boulder County organizations will receive a portion of $12 million in funding through the state's Scale Up grant. The grant will help promote internship opportunities throughout the Boulder County area. The recipients are Boulder Community Broadcast Association, Boulder Community Health, CODENS, Colorado Tree Care Sector Partnership, and Kaiser Foundation Research Institute. The grant will also help organizations with or without established internship programs create more opportunities for job seekers by providing training, education, and credentials. The Colorado Department of Labor's Office of the Future of Work is in charge of the Scale Up program and hopes to create more jobs in Colorado by June of 2025. Expect somewhat cloudy skies today, as we'll have moderately warm temperatures and a chance of thunderstorms later this evening. In Boulder, a high of 82 and a low of 58. In Denver, a high of 84 and a low of 60. In Fort Collins, a high of 84 and a low of 57. Outside the Boulder studio, it's currently 67 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
Boulder is one of many cities across the U.S. experiencing a lifeguard shortage. This may not seem like the end of the world for affluent families who can swim at private pools, but for low-income families and families of color, it means more children and adults will never learn to swim. Across the U.S., 64% of African American, 45% of Hispanic Latino, and 40% of Caucasian children have few to no swimming skills. Drowning is the leading cause of death for children between the ages of 1 and 4. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Dr. Linda Kahn, a pediatric emergency medicine physician at the Seattle Children's Hospital and professor of pediatrics at the University of Washington School of Medicine about pool closures and the impact it is having on millions of families.
Dr. Kwan, so to start off, one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you is that in Boulder, we have a major public pool, Spruce Pool, that's now been closed for 2 summers in a row. It was a very popular pool. It's right in the middle of town. And according to the city, they didn't have enough lifeguards. 90 out of the 140 they would have needed in order to open it. So I wanted to ask you, is this lifeguard shortage part of a larger trend? Are other towns and cities having to close pools because they don't have enough lifeguards?
This is a problem throughout the country. Everybody is talking about it in the aquatics community. Everybody has had a problem. Actually, over the past few years, this problem has been brewing. It's worsened during COVID when the pools actually shut down for 2 years. But we're going to continue to have a problem until we really put more resources into this.
Why can't they get more lifeguards? What's the problem?
I think that pay is one problem. And so many places have increased markedly the pay that they provide the lifeguards. Training is a cost and time, and then just getting, you know, people interested in it. But the whole water safety issue has been under-resourced in many of our communities, and it's time that we actually address it. And then I think there's another piece that we can bring up here, and that is that we have really whole communities that also don't have the economic means to take swim lessons, to pay to go to a pool. And so, I mean, even the public pools cost some money to go to. So that potential groups of students, high school students and others, just haven't had it on their radar as an activity. For instance, when I was growing up, which was a long time ago, the growing up in the tenements, you didn't think about going to swim lessons. You didn't think about ever being a lifeguard. And then being an Asian, that was not rational activity that one did. You know, I was supposed to study and grow up to be a doctor.
Yeah, some of the income and racial disparity statistics I was looking at about swimming are pretty alarming. So about 78% of African American children grow up in households where parents have no or low swimming skills. And I imagine because of this, African American children are about 5 times more likely to drown than Caucasian children of the same age group. And then 79% of children and households with incomes less than $50,000 don't know how to swim. I mean, what is not having the opportunity to learn how to swim or go to a pool mean for all of these families?
This is an important question to ask. What happens when you don't have access? We can look at some communities who were denied access. For instance, the Black community was denied access until the desegregation laws happened. And that community has borne the brunt of that history by not being as familiar with the water culture, not having entry into water culture-related jobs, and they have higher drowning rates. Whites have the lowest drowning rates of all. Native Americans, Alaska Natives, have the highest in our country. And Blacks have higher drowning rates than whites. The ratio is sometimes, depending on the age group, 2 to 1. And the disparities are greatest, most marked, in swimming pools for children over the age of 4. So the reasons, again, have nothing to do with their physical or physiological abilities. It's that they are from communities that have not had the historical background, the cultural background, the family's comfort around water and access.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to recognize that something like swimming is really passed down from one generation to another. I mean, in a lot of ways, is really tracing the privilege that's passed down from one generation to another or not passed down. And that privilege is having access to a pool, which is really a luxury.
It is a luxury. We have made it increasingly a luxury, and our communities have worked very hard to you know, increase bike paths where I live, running trails where I live, but they have not put those resources into the aquatics.
Okay, so my final question is definitely a pretty serious pivot. But since I have you here, I want to ask, does the whole teaching a baby to swim by throwing them in the pool technique hold any water?
There is no data showing that it works, and it is associated with greater fear of water. And those children do not, when they study them long term, they actually perform their swimming tests half as well as the children who have been trained in the more traditional, friendlier manner. I would like to add that the American Academy of Pediatrics has been very focused in the past year on the need to address and prevent trauma in children, because we now know that there's very clearly a long-term effect of that in many ways, in their interactions and their trust in their ability to bond later on. And so we have concern about that.
Okay, so don't throw your baby in the pool. Also, we need to open back up public pools.
Yes.
Dr. Linda Kwan is a pediatric emergency medicine physician at the Seattle Children's Hospital and professor of pediatrics at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
Social inequities can sometimes compound the vulnerabilities associated with living in an area at risk of climate disasters. Colorado State University environmental epidemiologist David Rojas has helped to develop a new tool called EnviroScreen to identify these areas and raise awareness and prompt mitigation measures before it's too late.
The purpose of this tool is not only map pollution or climate risks, if not also put into account people, so populations. Are those people living there where they have a lot of pollution and climate risk, or have also some social disadvantages, have more diseases in their communities? So we are putting both of the three factors together so we can have a better perspective of where probably we need more actions, changes, improvements at the Colorado level to improve or reduce inequities and environmental injustices.
Do you have an idea of which zones are those?
So we already have a preliminary map. So we know, depending on which geographical scale you are interested to, but at the county level, we already have a rank of what counties in Colorado have more risks, environmental and climate risk, but also more biological and social vulnerability.
So which populations, based on those results, living in which conditions do you see are the most affected?
I will say the top 10 counties with the highest inequities, environmental health inequities in Colorado, based on what we have until now, is our Pueblo County, Otero, Las Animas, Rio Grande, Mesa, Delta, Montrose, Adams, El Paso, and Bent.
Those areas, would you describe them as much more populated by marginalized communities, low-income communities, and in this case, Latino communities, or not necessarily?
So, ethnicity is one of the components that we take into account in this map. Education, income, there are also other components in this index or map. So it's not only those that take into account to actually highlight those areas. They need to have also pollution, oil, climate risk at the same time. So it's a combination of both perspectives. So definitely these areas have a more important concentration of inequities, social inequities, and probably health impacts. But the map put that in the context of environmental pollution and climate risk together.
Is there any other important aspect of this tool that you would like to highlight?
So the most important part will be that the community uses the tool. So the tool is another resource of information to improve the communities, the environment. So this is the starting point in many cases to see themselves about what are the risks in my community. Should we all need to ask or demand change? What are the aspects in my environment and my community that they need more change, help, or improvement? So the tool is not the end of the conversation. It's the start of the conversation. And we hope also many other authorities and departments uses this tool to actually identify where the priorities could be and start to add more information, add more actions. Based on what the tools try to map and highlight.
That was Colorado State University environmental epidemiologist David Rojas speaking about the EnviroScreen app he helped to develop.
Have a banana. Try the salami, Tommy.
You would degrade. It is time for Radio Nibbles, and John Landorf is here with a special guest.
Good morning, Rosanna, and good morning to everybody gathered around the gigantic KGNU kitchen table in the Boulder Valley and around the world. Before I introduce my guest, I want to mention a couple of upcoming events. One is that next week, July 6th to 10, is KGNU's Summer Fun Drive. We'll have a special supersized Radio Nibbles at 8:30 next week with special guests and thank you gifts and your calls and everything else. And if you're a food business and would like to support KGNU, call Verity down at KGNU. And also today's Nibbles column in the Boulder Weekly, well, it's all about spinach, actually. But I'm also looking to put together a guide to roadside farm stands in Boulder County. If you can help by sending details, nibbles@boulderweekly.com. My guest is Ben Teitelbaum. He's an associate professor of ethnomusicology. I'd love to talk to him about music, but he's here to talk about a group he volunteers with, Sunflower Seeds Ukraine, at 8:30. He and a guest are going to talk a little bit more about Ukraine and some other issues, but he's here to talk about a special benefit on July 7th. Tell us about the Sunflower Seeds Ukraine, the organization, and then we'll talk about the restaurants.
Sure. It's great to be with you, by the way, this morning.
Welcome,
John. Sunflower Seeds Ukraine is a local Boulder-based Ukrainian aid organization. As far as we know, it's the only one. And it was founded by two immigrants to Boulder from Ukraine, one of whom will be joining us also later this morning. And their focus is small-scale, quick, nimble aid, protective and military gear only, of course no weapons, to people defending Ukraine, primarily on the Eastern Front. And they've developed a model for doing that very efficiently. It's all volunteer. It's all volunteer the entire way throughout the supply chain. So they've been doing amazing work for years. They started in 2014.
Oh, so they've been doing this for a while.
They did, although somewhat more informally than an organization.
Fundraising effort is specifically for a specific unit in the Donbas.
Yes, the primary relationship they have is with the 95th Air Assault Brigade in the Donbas, which sounds quite mighty, of course, and it is an impressive brigade, but it's also a brigade that is unfortunately pretty undersupplied.
But this is to provide them with protective equipment and first aid kits and things like that.
Exclusively.
Let's talk about this benefit, because it's really pretty cool. On July 7th, a whole bunch of restaurants are going to donate a portion of their proceeds to the organization.
Yes. And we're quite grateful for that support. We now have over 50 restaurants throughout the region who have offered to donate a portion of their proceeds from July 7th, throughout the day on July 7th, to our cause. And so we're doing what we can to get the word out so that people take the opportunity to both enjoy themselves, support one of our local establishments, and do something for Ukraine in the process.
Well, and it's especially remarkable because as listeners know, because we've talked about it with chefs and other people, the restaurants locally have really gone through an extremely difficult time the past couple of years. Yeah. And on top of that, right now with rising prices and everything else, it's very difficult.
Absolutely.
But the among the restaurants that are involved, it's a lineup of some of Boulder's best. You've got Ashkara, modern Israeli cuisine, Black Belly, the Dushanbe Tea House, Cafe Aeon. Get some paella. There's also Mexican food from Centro, even Glacier ice cream, which may come in handy on that day because it's probably going to be hot, as well as Jack's Fish House, Leaf, My Neighbor Felix, Ozo Coffee, our friends, Rayback Collective, and of course New Mexican cuisine at Santo. All you got to do is go out to eat on that day. Where can people get more information about this part of it?
I would direct listeners to sunflowerseedsukraine.com/events if you want to be technical about it. Yeah. But if you go to our main webpage at sunflowerseedsukraine.com, .org, apologies. There you will get all this information and see the full lineup. We have restaurants up in the mountains as well, and north and south of Boulder. But Boulder is the hub.
Like I said, stay tuned because Ben's going to be here to talk more about the issues involved.
And it seems like from what I have read, John, food is not only the only love that you have. I read that when you were younger, your dream was that to be a music critic, talking to your musical heroes and being paid to go to concerts.
So oh, yeah.
This is your dream come true today.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I would love to talk to you about music because I've written about music for the past 35, 40 years. But it was great to...
It'd be a pleasure, John.
And I encourage you to read Nibbles in the Boulder Weekly this week because it's all about spinach. Turkish spinach dishes, Greek, Central American.
And what's the best thing you have eaten lately?
It was all spinach. You know, I don't know whether it was sog paneer or spinach empanadas, but it was definitely spinach. So read all about it today.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longobetter. Special thanks to Christian Garibay, Luis Licon, Alexis Kenyon, Shannon Young, and John Landorf for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a public affair that's just after the news headlines from the BBC.